the Senate Education and General Government Committee. Welcome, everyone. We may be tasting and cutting here for a while, but our intent is to hold a public hearing on Senate Bill 187 and hold a work session on Senate Bill 442. Senator Whitsitt is here now, so what we will do is start out with a public hearing on Senate Bill 503.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 503 expands the circumstances under which merged school districts could receive additional weight in the funding formula as a small high school. It adds the formulation for weighting if two districts merge. It declares emergency would take effect upon passage, and it has a subsequent referral to finance and revenue.
Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this bill today. My name is Doug Whitsitt. I represent Senate District 28. And Senate Bill 503 is a fairly simple bill, but a little background to begin with. Klamath County is the third largest county in the state of Oregon, with about 6,135 square miles. The county is roughly 100 miles long and 60 miles wide. The county school district is geographically by far the largest district in the state, with about 6,100 square miles. This huge school district has well fewer than 8,500 students, enabling its four small and remote high schools to access the small and remote high school funding. The four small and remote high schools are Gilchrist, Chilicon, Lost River, and Bonanza. Now, Gilchrist is about 100 miles from Lost River High School and from the Bonanza High School. Gilchrist is about 50 miles from the Chilicon High School, so you get an idea that they are really scattered out. The Klamath City School District is about 35 square miles and is completely surrounded by the Klamath County School District. This spring, Klamath County voters will decide whether those two districts should merge into a single Klamath County School District. The merger would not change the location of these four small and remote high schools, and the merger will not change the attendance at the high school. However, if the merger should occur, the combined ADMW of the newly formed district would exceed the 8,500 ADMW limit for small and remote high schools under current law. The newly formed district would lose about $2 million a biennium in funding for these small and remote high schools. The only purpose of Senate Bill 503 is to prevent these small and remote high schools from losing their small and remote high school status and funding only because the merged districts have an ADM greater than 8,500. These statutory changes are found on page 2 of the bill at line 31, sections 1, 9, sub A, B, and 9, sub B, B. The language regarding merger of high schools does not change current statute and is only reworded for statutory construction. This is about the merger of districts, not about the merger of schools. Citizens of Klamath County are voting on merging the two districts to save money, eliminate duplication, and achieve better economy. It is extremely unlikely that if this bill passes, it will become law in time to affect the outcome of the Klamath County merger vote. Those votes are scheduled for this spring, and I believe the first one is in March. So it won't have an effect positively or negatively on the vote. Any expected opposition, I would assume, would arise from the school administrators because, frankly, any useful merger is probably going to reduce the administrative positions. We urge the committee to approve Senate Bill 503 and report it to the Senate with a due pass recommendation. That concludes my presentation, and I'd be happy to answer questions if you have any.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for Senator Whitsitt? Senator Whitsitt, do you see this as an isolated, once-in-a-lifetime kind of a case, or do you anticipate this to be more common?
We weren't able to find any other situation where the merger of the districts would have the same effect. I worked with the Department of Education. and with Legislative Revenue Office, and we simply weren't able to find any other situation in the state where this merger of two districts would have the same effect of actually reducing the amount of funding to a small or remote high school without actually changing the physical relationship of the high schools.
If we were to do one of those infamous school runs on this bill, Steve Meyer, the Legislative Revenue Officer, this would show per pupil spending less in all the other districts by a tiny amount, correct?
Yes, this would have no... It would have no revenue difference within Klamath and Klamath County and Klamath City districts, but yes, it would. If this bill does not pass, then there would be another roughly $2.2 million available for all the other 198 school districts and the 20 ESDs or whatever. Yes, that's true.
Yeah, and I guess the comment would be that's always shaky politics around this building when those school runs come out. Okay, but we thank you. We've got a list of people, some of whom have come from more than 50 miles away.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's just go down the list. And the superintendent of Klamath County, Greg Thee. We do have a list of people to go through, so if you could summarize your written statements, and we'll try to limit this to... just a few minutes. I appreciate you coming up here and talking to us, Mr. Superintendent.
Senator Haas, thank you very much, committee members. Appreciate the opportunity to come up from Klamath Falls and speak in support of Senate Bill 503. Senate Bill 503 extends small high school funding for districts, even if the new district would exceed the current limitation on weighted ADM, average daily membership. A newly merged Klamath County School District would exceed the current ADM limit, as Senator Whitsitt described. Last fall, citizens from both our local districts petitioned the Southern Oregon ESD to merge the Klamath County School District and the Klamath Falls City Schools. The SOESD ordered the merger effective July 1, 2010, and this spring voters in each district will vote whether to uphold that order. As the state statute currently reads, the combined district would lose approximately $2 million per year in small high school funding, and I don't believe in this case our citizens should be penalized in state school funding for seeking merger. Klamath County School District is a unique district. As Senator Whitsitt said, we are the largest geographic district in the state. We have cover about 6,000 square miles. We have about 6,200 students in 20 buildings. We are a fairly good-sized district in terms of enrollment, but we're unique from the standpoint that we have some good-sized schools, high schools and elementary, Henley High School around 700. We go all the way down to Gilchrist with about 200 kids in grades K-12.
Can you tell us why the decision to merge, the basis on why there was this merger?
The merger was brought about by petitions from citizens in both school districts, feeling that it was the best way to go in terms of efficiency and product to our students. We had just finished a lengthy 19-month process where we eliminated an overlap zone, which was unique to our districts. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but the Klamath County School District and the Klamath City Schools are the two districts in Klamath County. And currently, we have an area called the overlap zone where students attend elementary school grades K-8 in the Klamath County School District and grades 9-12 in the City School District. Our boards jointly agreed to eliminate that zone. And so this year, beginning July 1, we'll have two districts that do not share an overlap and the associated issues with that. A group of citizens felt that we needed to go one step further and merge our districts, thus the petition sent to the ESD, which I said ordered that to take effect July 1, 2010. Then citizens who opposed the merger filed remonstrances, thus the vote that we're going to have in March and then in May.
Okay. Appreciate that.
Okay.
I just wanted to get that on record that the people down there were looking for essentially administrative
efficiencies.
Okay. Any questions? Panel?
Yeah.
Senator Cruz?
I guess, and although you, I probably should have asked Senator Witz at this, because we're talking about the merger of two school districts, but the bill also talks about the merger of two schools. I'm wondering why. Yes, it is. Is it two high schools in that school district merge?
Senator Cruz, that language is actually in the original part of the bill. It is just, if you look closely, I think you'll find it has just been deleted and then restated for statutory construction purposes.
I was looking at the original. Okay. Thank you very much.
Can I ask Mr. Chair? Can I ask a question now that Senator Witz is back up?
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. It looks like the approach that you have is to change the statute to accommodate this situation, which I appreciate. But how far are you away from, if the districts merge, how far are you away from the 8,500 student limit?
We'll be about 10,000 actual enrollment. Weighted ADM is probably going to be around 12,000 in that area. Klamath County School District currently has a weighted enrollment of 7,620, and I'm guessing the city school district is around 4,500 or so. So we'd be in about the 12,000 range weighted.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Superintendent, if I could just kind of keep you on standby as we go through this list, that might be useful. James Huntsman. Thank you for coming. And again, if you could just summarize your statements.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate your
start
time.
Off with your name.
I know it's a. My name is James Huntsman. And I'm the special education director for Klamath County School District. And made the drive up today, I guess largely in part, to advocate for our special education students in Klamath County Schools. I'm in favor of Senate Bill 503. I agree with the effort made on behalf of our citizens to be efficient and merge our school districts together. The part that concerns me is that loss of small school funding for our distant communities. And so my letter basically just talks about those communities of Chiloquin, Gilcrest, Bonanza, and Merrill that are distant from our suburban kind of hub for the school district. That $2 million funding allows those small schools, which are, because of their small size, inefficient in many ways, but it gives the opportunities for elective classes, technology, some arts, very little in our school district, but some opportunities for kids that also involve special ed kids. That's where they get their chance to interact with their non-disabled peers. And while our suburban Klamath Falls population looks to get more unified and efficient, it doesn't, in our school district, affect those distant communities that are not separate school districts. Those are part of our school district. And that's where my letter heads.
Yeah. Well, I very much appreciate you coming weighing in on this. In these kinds of things, we don't always get someone representing the special needs component of the school system. So it means a lot to me that you came up here to weigh in on this. Any questions? How are you doing this year?
This year's going very well. It's an interesting time. Our community's kind of seeking some changes, some things that I thought should have maybe happened a long time ago. But school's going well, and our special needs kids are doing well. We're not struggling that way. But those distant schools are still very distant. So, I appreciate your time. I know it's a small bill, and appreciate your time and effort and concentration on this.
Well, thank you. John Rademacher.
Chairman Haas and members of the Committee on Education and General Government, my name is John Rademacher. I live at 420 East Day School Road in Chiloquin. I'm currently a school board member for the Klamath County School District. Thank you for this opportunity to speak as an advocate for small schools. Small schools are not just a place where everybody knows your name, but you also know everybody else's name. It's a great place. I spent 27 years at Chiloquin Junior Senior High School as a teacher, administrator, parent, and I'm currently on the school board. As soon as I retired from education, I got on the school board. And the number one reason that I'm an advocate for small schools, it's a great place for kids. As a teacher, it was great to be able to get to know the kids. Sometimes you'd have them two or three times during their school career. I've had kids two or three times a day in a high school as a teacher. I kept in contact with them after graduation. I can speak for the small schools in Klamath County. They do a great job of educating kids for a variety of things. Chiloquin's produced doctors, teachers, coaches, firemen, there's a kid that's doing Garvin work now, so you can do your GPS stuff. I'm getting old, so I appreciate the fact that a Chiloquin grad is the head of the pharmacy department at Merrill West or Sky Lakes in Klamath Falls. And he's a beaver, by the way. And just so you don't get confused, there's also a girl that graduated. She's a duck, and she's head at the Sacred Heart. And Eugene, she's one of the head administrators there. So. It's just, you know, we got kids that do construction. I've had one that helped build my house. Just great bunch of kids. Some of them are building drawers at Geldwin and stuff. As a parent, I can speak for small schools. If you've ever been into them, you know about the personal contact that the staff are able to give to the kids. I've had two kids. One's a duck, one's a beaver. They got out. They didn't have to take any 092 math classes. They were ready for college. They had all their foreign language. They got to play sax, got to play sports, one of them played the trumpet, student government, lots of good stuff. As an administrator, this is where the bill really comes in. When I was administrator at Chiloquin, it's always tough to fill lots of classes. I taught physics and chemistry, and a lot of times, or trigonometry, a lot of times classes that only have 10 to 15, maybe 20 kids in them. When you're running a small school, that's hard to justify with a student-teacher ratio. And that's why this bill is so important to keep those small school funds. Sometimes a band with 160 high school kids would only have 25 or 30 kids, whereas a large high school might have 40 or 60. As a board member, I'm now responsible for four schools, as mentioned, Bonanza, Lost River, Chiloquin, and Gilchrist. And we have one current Henley High School, which is a medium to large school. And next summer, we'll have at least one more. That'll be Mazama. And we might have KU if the voters choose to merge. I can't justify, as a board member, increased costs at a small school being footed by the larger schools. We will still need the funding for small schools because they are small schools and they cost more. I ask you to pass Senate Bill 503 for several reasons. First of all, because of the distances, we can't move these kids to a larger school. You couldn't consolidate the schools. Right now, some of our kids ride 50 miles on a bus. They'd be on 100 miles a bus a day if you tried to make them into a large school. The importance of small schools, the inherent needs of small schools require extra funds. This is technically cost neutral. This bill will not cost any more for the state budget at Chiloquin or Lost River or the other schools because we currently get that. So I believe it's cost neutral. But the main reason is to stay fair and equitable to the students of the small schools at Klamath County. Thank you again, and if you have any questions, more than happy to answer those. I like small schools, if you couldn't tell.
Any questions? Thank you, sir.
Good.
Appreciate your service.
Thank you.
I'd like to call up Katie Bruner and Susan Teamy, if you want to both come up together. Bert, are you together? You want to let her handle it, or she doesn't need your help? Or
yeah, we can kind of just...
No, no, I'm going to go.
Do you want me to go first? I'm quick. I'm like 30 seconds. I'm scared to death.
Don't be scared.
Mine's longer.
Thank you, Senator, for allowing me to speak today. My name is Katie Bruner. I'm a registered nurse down in Klamath Falls and mother of four children. I'm a native of Klamath Falls, and I currently live in the south suburb area of Klamath Falls, and my kids attend the county school district. This Senate bill before us today is kind of a big deal. I'm here before you to personally request, actually urge, your immediate attention to this and your support for this Senate bill. As everyone stated, the four rural high schools in our county do currently qualify our district to receive the small school funding. And at this very moment, we are attempting to consolidate our two school districts within Klamath Falls and unite our community. The unification is, again, another big deal. We are certain that combining our resources will allow us to survive in these hard economic times of budget cuts and declining economy. The small school funding, as mentioned before, is vital to those schools as they remain small and they remain rural in our district of over 6,000 square miles. Consolidation would not change how isolated they are from the other county schools. They would still be small, they would still be rural, and they'll still be expensive to run. Losing this funding because of a probable merge of districts and resources would be devastating to our rural high schools, and I think it's just important to try to get you guys to understand that. And how often are you asked to approve a bill that doesn't cost any money, except the gas and snow chains it took to get here? It's really revenue neutral, legislative neutral. And I implore all of you to understand that a mere blot of ink in your world kind of affects our entire world down there. And as a mom, I look at this as we look forward to combining our districts and becoming one district and one voice in Klamath Falls, I can't help but thinking of Whoville and saying, if you can hear our voices, we really need Horton to hear us to try and get this passed and to get this going. And we do desperately need that Horton to hear us. I honestly cannot think of one reason why you would not consider approving this bill. It's a significant amendment, and again, just to remind you, it is revenue and expense neutral. That's a big deal right now as well. And I just really thank you for your time and your attention to allow us to come up here and speak.
And I thank you for quoting Horton, one of my familiar name in our house. Go ahead. We'll take questions after you're done.
Okay. Senator Haas and honorable committee members, my name is Susie Teamy. I retired this year after 41 years of teaching in the classroom. 14 in California in an urban school district in the San Francisco Bay Area and 27 in a rural school district, Klamath Falls. We have four grown children and have lived in Klamath County for 30 years. Thank you for considering my testimony today in support of Senate Bill 503. Many of my colleagues, both teachers and retired teachers, have an interest in helping our community improve our schools. One of the ways we can contribute is to speak for our schools, and I am here today to encourage your support for this legislative amendment that Senator Whitsitt has introduced. In the last 4 months, many teachers and retired educators in Klamath County have taken the initiative to volunteer to help our schools develop a better plan to serve all school-aged children throughout Klamath County. This amendment is part of our effort to make a better school system possible. In the face of economic uncertainty and funding reductions, we need to do everything possible to look for ways to maintain our level of services to all students in Klamath County. Senate Bill 503 will enable our community and any similar community to consider the merging efficiencies of district services, which will ultimately keep as much funding in the classroom as possible. That is why I am here. The classroom is where students learn and where they are impacted on a daily basis. Having taught both rural and urban students over the past 41 years, I can attest to the fact that there is no difference between the fundamental educational needs of a rural child and an urban child. A high school student in Portland has the same educational and developmental needs as a high school student at Lost River, which serves Merrill and Malin, Oregon, towns of about 800 people. These schools today have programs similar to our larger high school because of small rural funding. It would be discriminatory to these rural schools to lose that funding and thus the educational programs these students have now. Bottom line is that we have statutes in place that help our districts deliver a quality education to our small rural schools. The amendment you are considering today will enable that statute to continue to meet the intent of the legislature without penalizing a community that is considering the consolidation and efficiency that can be achieved through merging districts. Four of our high schools in Klamath County, which you've heard, but I'll say them again, Lost River, Gilcrest, Chiloquin, and Bonanza are the perfect model of what defines small rural high schools. With or without merger, all four remain the same, small rural high schools. And the same is true for our small rural elementary schools. In conclusion, if your committee can make this simple revision to the statute, districts throughout the state will be able to consider more efficient district management models. Then our small school funding can even do more because it will have a better chance of reaching the classroom and the needs of students. This is why we went through the snow, bad weather, and 5 hours of driving to get here to share this with you because we are small and we need your help. Thank you, Senators, for listening, and thank you for anything you can do to accelerate Senate Bill 503 through the legislative process. It is a totally cost-neutral decision for you to make. Thank you, and make the right decision.
Thank you. Did you have anything to add?
My name is Bert Teamy, and I'm the designated driver, so that's why I'm here. I have white knuckles among anything else. We moved from San Jose, California, back in the mid-70s in order to have our kids not grow up in San Jose, and moved to Klamath Falls and really enjoyed the small rural schools, and our kids exceeded all of our expectations. They represented the state of Oregon in the National Spelling Bee 5 times, so I even learned how to spell a little bit, and it was quite a trip. My journey started in the state of Maryland in 1958. I was an immigrant and joined relatives on a farm. And so I joined a high school class in 1958 in a small rural community. And about half a year later, I was introduced to the discretional disparity going on in rural school systems, in that I learned that my school was all white and the other school in the county was for African Americans. And it took another 10 years before they were equally funded, and that the county, which was Queen Anne County, built one high school. So my emphasis and interest is in equal opportunity and equal quality in education for small rural schools. And therefore, I hope that you support the Senate Bill 503 and the funding therefore. As you know, the modern era is more than just graduating students that can read and write, but you have to compete internationally. All you have to do is listen to Bill Gates to see his concern about future engineers, et cetera, that we have to graduate. And small rural schools, I think, are a big part in our future generation. As you know, Senate Bill 503 is cost neutral. And even if Oregon, and I personally come from a stand of an independent, if Oregon would go like Nevada, where we would have county school districts rather than 198 separate school districts, we would still have small rural schools. We would have further districts, but small rural schools. And so the funding, the necessity for the funding is still there. Finally, I'd like to close with a person that I've always admired very much, who came from a very small rural school and at age 16 entered the freshman class at Stanford, and then during her freshman year was selected to join the law school, or was admitted to the law school at Stanford. And her name is Sandra Day O'Connor. And I have a book here that I would like all of you to read. It's wonderful, and it was presented to my wife and signed by Sandra Day O'Connor. And so I'd like you to think about this in support of all the future Sandra Day O'Connors that live in this country that need your support in rural small schools.
Thank you all. I really appreciate you making the trip up here and make sure it's not in vain. It's interesting, though, I represent a couple of high schools in my district that have 2,000 kids. Senator Bonamici has a couple that size, too. Nonetheless, we're not unsympathetic to your plight or this situation. So thank you. We do have other people to testify on that. Before I do that, I want to dispense with some business on another bill. So I want to. We'll come back to 503, but for now I want to close the hearing on Senate Bill 503 and go into a work session on Senate Bill 442. And colleagues, if I could direct your attention to the Dash 2 amendment. The chancellor's here in the building, and he wants to talk to us about further amendments. But for now, I think he's got some things he wants to help us with, and as we move forward. I will say that you've also got a memo, I think, from Legislative Council on a you don't have that. One of the sections that we had hoped to put in this new amendment was designed to make sure that any money is achieved from any kind of a cost savings, administrative centralization, where whatever it would be, would stay within the university system in the form of reducing tuition, lowering the teacher, the faculty-student ratio, and those kinds of things. We're dealing with Legislative Council and doing that in a way that doesn't bind the next legislature. So we're still working on that. It's still a work in progress. So, Mr. Chancellor, if you'd like to come up and comment on that amendment to this bill.
Thank you, Chair Haas. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is George Pernsteiner. I'm the Chancellor of the University System here in Oregon. And I thank you for the opportunity to discuss a little bit about Senate Bill 442 and the Dash 2 amendments and some suggestions we might have, without language yet, that might well lead into some Dash 3 amendments. For some background, as you know, we have our highest enrollment in history right now, and student success is at the forefront of what we are trying to achieve. And so we want to make sure that anything that we do keeps that uppermost in mind. I think there's some. We also recognize that in this economy, we cannot do things in the same way that we've done them before. I don't think there's any question about that, and I don't think anyone of our presidents or board members believes that we will continue to do as we have done in every case. This bill has some, I think, some really good ideas in it, and we will need, though, some cooperation that goes beyond the university system in some of them. Semesters is an idea that would involve also the community colleges. And I spoke today with the Commissioner of Community Colleges, and it would really take not just the Board of Higher Ed, but also the Board of Education to be able to take a look at this. I would also suggest that it may be that you don't want to do it statewide all at once, that you may want to look at different regions of the state because of the feeder relationship among the community colleges and the university. So that how you word it may allow you to make changes more rapidly in certain areas than in others without stymieing you. That leads, too, to some other things that we were taking a look at in the bill with regard, for example, to enrollment management and common application. We can do many of these things now, and I would hope that if they prove to be beneficial, and we'll be talking to the presidents about them tomorrow, that we can move forward and not be stopped by having the study as opposed to implementation. So there are some things like that I think we want to be able to work together on. Finally, with regard to the administrative systems and the other systems that are noted toward in Section 2, Sub 6 of the bill, of the Dash amendments, there are some things in there that I think we may have some concerns about with regard to whether or not an individual system may make sense as opposed to looking at the totality of administrative and student services systems. I was reminded today that one of our campuses has attempted to install a document imaging system three times unsuccessfully before, and so rather than
then mandate such a system to include it within more general language of administrative and student services systems might allow us to pick and choose those subsystems that make the most sense. And so with those kinds of suggestions in mind, we'd love to bring you some further amendments probably next week.
Okay.
Ask that question?
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome, Chancellor. When we had the hearing on this bill before, one of the witnesses from one of the regional universities testified that they were going to have a discussion about coming up with a plan to have a common application common among the regional universities. And I wondered why they weren't using or even considering or didn't seem to be considering the nationally recognized common application. And I wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonamici, that would be something we will talk about with the presidents tomorrow. I actually am thinking that it may make more sense for us to have a system-wide application system as opposed to one that is restricted just to the smaller campuses, and the reason is pretty clear. We have had, in the last several years, the ability to serve more students at Southern and at Eastern at the same time that at Portland State and at Oregon we are bursting at the seams. And so if we have a way of being able to manage the enrollment to admit students in more than one place, students who may not even know Eastern and Southern exist, we might actually be able to more effectively manage overall enrollment for the system. And that's something that the presidents and I will be talking about tomorrow, and we'll be discussing with our board later this week.
Thank you.
So we may use the national system. We may use a system that's similar to California's or to Florida's. Florida does it on a web-enabled basis. There are various methods to use.
Thank you.
Questions? Any questions for the Chancellor? Okay. Well, colleagues, for sake
thank
of
you.
Thank you. Acknowledging this is a work in progress and we're not moving this bill today, but for the sake of momentum, I would like to adopt the Dash 2 amendment.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 442.
Senator Morse moves the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 442. Any discussion? Senator Cruz?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I always find it interesting when we hear that we can already do it, but they're not doing it. I always find that to be an interesting concept. But I'm also really intrigued with Section 1, and the Chancellor said that going to a semester calendar is a bigger discussion, and I would agree with that, but there's nothing in this bill that prevents that discussion from happening.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like the study aspect of the semester calendar and agree that that's something that should be discussed. With your statement about considering further changes, I'm a little concerned about the shall development and implement all of the sections in all of the issues that are set out in Section 6. But with the understanding that we can work on that language to make sure that that's something that's workable. I think all of these things need to be discussed and looked at and perhaps implemented. So with that understanding, if it's your desire, I will support this with that understanding.
Thank you. Thank you. Further discussion? Seeing none, any objections to adopting the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 442? Seeing none, so ordered. Close the work session on Senate Bill 442, and I will reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 503. I understand Senator Morris has a previous commitment.
Thank you. Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
He gets to leave.
Next up, I have Chuck Bennett on Senate Bill 503, and he may be retiring in the hallways.
Little bit of thing, wasn't there?
Mr. Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chuck Bennett, representing the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Mr. Chairman, this is the kind of association lobbyist dream come true where you have, or nightmare come true, where you have friends on all sides of an issue, and that's what we have here. I think you'll recall that in previous sessions you have, or this committee, and I know several of you have served on this committee for several sessions, have dealt with legislation around this issue involving Klamath County and Klamath City. The good news is that Klamath County and Klamath City went through a process to deal with that overlap discussion, and my understanding is that they reached an agreement on how to deal with that boundary problem, and we're proceeding toward a July 1st completion, which was discussed, as you recall, in legislation brought by Representative Girard last session, as I recall, when a group of citizens appropriately collected signatures and brought the issue of a merger to the ballot, hence a change in what's the debate now. My understanding, and I know I'll be corrected if I'm wrong, is that this comes up within the next week or so on the ballot for resolution, which could well moot this bill. No merger, no reason to change the law. So at least initially, we would suggest that any review of this await the outcome of the election to determine whether or not there is a merger here. But more than that, on bills like this, and those of you who have served on education or on the revenue committees will recall that whenever you see a bill brought by a district, and in this case Klamath County, appropriately so, there's never a doubt who brought the bill, because you can look and see who benefits, and the beneficiary brought the bill. In this case, and more power to them, Klamath County, while they're not costing the state of Oregon generally any money, what this would cost really is inequity in the fairness of our distribution system. That $2.2 million increase means an additional $220 per student in this new district, over and above what any other district in the state gets. It's a substantial change in funding for them. It represents, on a statewide basis, $3 to $4 per student being transferred to a new Klamath County school district as incorporated with Klamath City. Again, we're very concerned. We have a funding coalition that we have worked with over the years, which is a broad-based and representative group of superintendents from across the state that has dealt with these kinds of issues and has worked very closely with the legislature to develop an equitable distribution system at the time that the system was put together, tried to deal with issues involving small schools, which it did reasonably successfully, although I would submit to you that during this session you're going to see a whole batch of bills, and I happen to have a chance to look at some of them today as I looked at this bill, that deal with questions involving small schools, small high schools in merging districts, small high schools in districts where the question of whether or not the high school might be closed and what its economic impact would be on the community. There's a series of them coming in, including proposals from a small schools task force that's looking at distribution changes in the formula. And what I would suggest to you is that this kind of narrow bill probably should be investigated in a broader context, which is, should we raise the size of district, not whether it merges or not, that's not particularly relevant. Any district at 10,000 with a small school, should that be included in the small school correction? And just to kind of give you a feel, if I can find it real quickly, for what we're talking about, we would be dealing with, give me just a second, comparable size districts like Springfield, Tigard, Reynolds, David Douglas, Medford, and Gresham. That's the size this new district would be. and have a close look at them, have a close look at Ben Lapine and other districts in the state to determine if we have others that ought to be eligible for this kind of correction and whether or not this is the appropriate approach to develop the correction. I don't know. It's a very interesting idea. I am concerned. I mean, I've been involved in politics long enough to whenever you see an election and you see a maneuver around an election to wonder if it isn't an attempt to influence the election. And I'm politically suspicious enough, and maybe it's just me, to wonder what's going on here when you see something like this occur. And I don't think this is this important an issue, which is small school funding, the preservation of small remote high schools, elementary schools, school districts, should be resolved in this kind of patchwork fashion. This really is an important problem. You can add to it. I mean, this thing sort of goes on and on. I can keep going. I'll try to round up. But we've got districts where, because of the date for admission, 1995, is just long enough ago, and we've undergone declining enrollment long enough, we've now had districts where the schools have begun to dip into the appropriate size, but they're not eligible under the existing law, which means maybe we ought to look at the size and the date. But there are a whole batch of issues at work here, and hopefully we can look at this in a more comprehensive fashion than in a single piece of legislation like this. And more power to the folks that bring this. This is a difficult time in Oregon for funding education. I think we look at bills regularly that where folks are really trying to figure out ways to protect their local schools, and we certainly support them in every effort we can, but our organization's approach is to try to look at this in its totality for the state and in the most equitable distribution fashion possible. And I don't think this bill meets that threshold, and quite simply because of the distortion of $220 a student being allocated here. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chuck, I don't know if you were here at the beginning when I asked the question of, well, how is this a district-specific approach? Why? How many students will be in the new district if merged? And I believe the answer was about 10,000 actual and about 12,000 weighted. And you talked about comparable districts. And I understand the concern that if we have one district with 10,000 students and they get this recognition when the other districts at 10,000 don't. But it looks like it's a two-part. It's a remote and small. And so of the other districts, the comparable districts that you mentioned, you said Springfield, Tiger, Gresham, and Reynolds. And then did you say Ben Lapine? Because
David Douglas, I think we could look at. With other factors in place, I think we can look at a batch of other districts. But
which of those are remote schools as well as?
Well, that's what we need to find out under the definition of remote. You know, the problem, Senator Bottomici, is that I think this is a large school district at 10,000. I mean, quite simply, this is the same size as substantial metropolitan school districts. They have the benefit of being a large district and want to retain some of the funding privileges of being small and remote. The two just weren't designed to go together. This was to deal with some real specific issues, and I think that this moves well beyond that. Or at least I'd suggest to you that you take a look at it and look at this again in its totality. This is a much bigger issue than we see in this bill, and I think you'll see bills that describe it for you in broader terms.
And just a brief follow-up, if I may, Mr. Chair. As I listened to the testimony, I certainly, and as the chair explained, he and I both have very large, I think what's the largest high school in the state in my district, Westview High School, with many more than 2,000 students, and Sunset High School with more than 2,000 students. I appreciate the benefits of small schools. And I hope that someday we can have, in different economic times, we can have a discussion about incentives for the creation of small schools. There are advantages and disadvantages. And of course, in this economic time, we can't talk about how to incentivize small schools in urban districts. So I just want to make sure that we understand that we're talking about a situation where we have the remote schools as well as the small schools, and maybe someday we can talk about small schools in urban areas as well. That was a comment, not a question. Thank you.
Are you worried, Chuck, about the problem? I mean, there are lots of people in this building, in fact, who would like to consolidate the 199 school districts down to about half that. That this issue would crop up everywhere, or would that be a better way to do this? Or,
Mr. Chairman, it probably would be to take a look at this. I mean, this is certainly a legitimate issue. Don't misunderstand me. This, to me, is a very legitimate issue. It's a small, remote high school. But then I look at Toledo, which is a small high school with declining enrollment that could well end up closed, and they'd like to have small school funding in order to stay open. I mean, there's just this mix of problems around the state that I think demand a comprehensive solution. We haven't looked at this in a long, well, really since the last consolidation. Hence the night, as I recall, the 1995 date. But this is the kind of thing that probably ought to be looked at. It also, I think, Mr. Chairman, really begs a discussion of declining enrollment and its impact on state schools. When you've got over 60% of the schools with declining enrollment, and you've got schools where the decline brings you into some really difficult situations, I think it's worth looking at. The more common response has been the one we dealt with in Senator Cruz's district last session in South Umpqua.
We have to bring that one out.
But no, I don't mean to bring, but it's not just your district. We saw it with Ione, we saw it with Napa, where more commonly you'll see these small high school communities try to pull out of the districts they're in, because the districts, it's not just district consolidation, it's all of a sudden the school becomes redundant, the question of whether the kid should be bused, and you know, this stuff gets very complicated. The more common solution, and your solution, has been to split districts more commonly than to consolidate. So we've got a really interesting discussion to go, because there's not been, for many years, a real stomach to consolidate districts. But if you do, you're going to have to look at this kind of issue, because this is really, you know, we don't want to see these schools closing, and we need to figure out how to help them. But I hope you'll look at it in the broader package.
Okay.
Good.
Thank you,
Chuck.
Morgan Allen, ODE. It's Morgan here. Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Morgan Allen with the Department of Education. And I'm here today. Senator Whitsitt actually asked us to do some numbers, run some numbers on what it would look like with and without the small school correction. So I wanted to just share those with the committee. The department's neutral on the bill, although I probably need to declare a potential conflict of interest, because my lovely wife was born and raised in Klamath Falls, went to Henley High School, and my in-laws all live down there. So I have to be careful.
You better watch what you say here.
But as you see, and I think this was mentioned earlier, the loss, if the merger goes and this bill doesn't pass, is about $2 million. So I asked Brian Reeder to run the numbers for the current school year for Klamath Falls and Klamath County and the extended ADMW numbers. And you can see that they have about 12,463 extended ADMW between the two school districts, and Klamath County School District has about 340 extra weighted ADMW due to the small high school correction, and that's where you account for the approximately $2 million loss if the districts were to merge. So we just wanted to present that information at the request of Senator Whitsitt.
Okay, appreciate that. And you're neutral on this. Any questions for Mr. Allen? Thank you for hanging around so long. Is there anyone else who wanted to testify on this bill today? Well, I want to thank all of the people. Oh, I'm sorry.
So
Senator Metzger, you wanted to weigh in. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a few comments for the committee, and I haven't prepared an amendment to this bill just yet. I'm a sponsor of it, but I just want to throw it out now because I want to see kind of how this evolves, and I think some of the testimony here, you know, has pointed out some of the issues. And but I want to point out one of the reasons that I also share the concern of the general topic, but trying to figure out where we go. I have one in my district, Cascade Locks High School, that has just been closed by Hood River County because of declining enrollment. Like some of the schools you've heard about here, Cascade Locks is a separate community, isolated on the Columbia River Gorge, and when you lose your school and you're already struggling economically, it's almost impossible to recover. The school board, since this bill was actually drafted just last month, has made a decision to send those kids to Hood River Valley High School farther down the gorge next year. And as you can imagine, as some of the folks here have been testifying on behalf of their communities, there's real concern about what this does to the rest of the fabric, because there's no games to go to, no reason for parents to come anymore to Cascade Locks. And one of the things that I've been working on, and actually with some of the people in the room here that we work with on a regular basis, and I won't ask them to talk about it today until we have a further discussion, but is some way to be able to kind of deal with some of these situations. And part of the concept that I've tried to develop there, and not even sure whether the school board there would go for that, but because of the lateness of the hour that some of these things happen, in this case Cascade Locks, they want to consider a charter school, they're considering maybe a merger with Corbett or some other way to keep their community intact, but it's impossible to do when you make a decision the end of February 2009 for September of 10. Once you've lost your school, you've lost it. And I had the real privilege, probably one of the most inspiring things I've ever had an opportunity to do was to speak to the graduation of 19 Cascade Locks kids about 3 years ago. And it's just amazing, what that does for a community. And one of the concepts that if we continue to consider this bill later, Mr. Chair, I'd like to talk about is for them at least an opportunity, to see how what they can do for their community, and what I would call a school within a school, and trying to talk to the folks at Hood River about it. If it's cost savings, and I understand the merger, where kids would go to that high school because there's really no alternative time frame right now and the cost to do that, but where they would maintain their Cascade Locks, and you transfer this to some of your own schools, I think, identity, their own transcript. So you have those savings, but they maintain that. And then temporarily, maybe just the 1 year, maintain that small school fund so that at least the community has an opportunity to explore other options. And if those materialize, they'd have an opportunity to still be Cascade Locks Pirates. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. But it's really difficult on a community when these things are thrown at them and there are no time frames for an alternative. And that's just, I wanted to throw out to the community because that's one thing I've been working on with some of our education partners who have been very receptive to that concept. It's a little different than what we're talking about here because it is short term, but at least it involves a little more time to talk about how do we preserve our community. And I just wanted to throw that out, Mr. Chair. It obviously fits under this particular bill, but it also is a subset, as Mr. Bennett pointed out, of this whole issue of it's not just the schools themselves, but when you're in these small communities, and I actually went to a one-room schoolhouse part of my grade school career, it is the fabric of the community. And when you lose a school in the community, you lose the ability to grow that community because no one wants to take their children there if you don't have a school. So I just thank you. I just wanted to throw that out. We're working on that, and as we have further discussions on this, and see what happens in Klamath County in the next couple of weeks, may inform where we go or don't go. But I appreciate the opportunity to throw that out.
Appreciate those comments and the comments about looking at this in a broader scope and dealing with declining enrollment in virtually everywhere in the state, except for some of the suburbs in the metro areas, which has problems on the other side. Okay. I wanted to thank all of the folks who came up from Klamath Falls. It's important that we hear from you, and I know it's a long drive, but I hope you were received well and had a good visit here, and that we heard your voice. Okay? We're adjourned. Mr. Thede, come on up here. How you doing?
I was wondering the other day, we were talking about ESD. Was your dad the first ESD superintendent?
I think we need to bring it. We're not really done.
Left.
Shoot, I thought we were going to escape.
I'm calling back into order the Education Committee because we have another bill that I was looking at one page when it was on page two. I'm so sorry. Yeah. I knew that because I've been talking about it this morning.
Good to see you.
This will wrap up in my goodbye. So let's open up a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 650.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 650 establishes a budget review committee for each education service district board, provides for the committee's membership, and requires the committee to make written recommendations for approval of, rejection of, or changes to the budget. It specifies an earlier date of application to the Multnomah ESD.
Yes, Ms. Botkin, if you'd like to come up. And we have some other witnesses. So sorry, Mary. I knew you were here, and I...
That's okay. I understand the confusion. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Mary Botkin with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, and we represent the Multnomah County Education Service District. And this bill has been introduced at the request of our local there at that ESD. With me today is Issa Simpson, who is our staff rep. We had hoped, actually, to have several of our members here today, but it's a teaching day. It's a school day, so they would be in the classroom today and could not sort of get away easily.
Mr. Chair, I was confused for a minute. Mary, are you representing the Multnomah ESD?
No, I'm sorry. I'm representing AFSCME, which represents the folks who work at the ESD.
You said you were representing Multnomah ESD.
I'm sorry.
To clarify.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
No, sir. Always the workforce.
Yes.
Contrary to what some people believe, this bill was not introduced in retaliation for the 10-day labor dispute at MESD last year, but rather the labor dispute illuminated many problems within the budgeting system of this ESD for sure. We would never presume to speak for others that we do not represent. We do not know what their budgeting process is. I know that the committee staff has made available to you copies of the Secretary of State's audit that was done, which also further illuminated some of the budgeting process problems that were there, some of the poor business practices. And actually, the bill that we put together with your assistance and with the assistance of Legislative Council was designed not to hamper the ability of the ESD to function, but rather to enhance its function and to illuminate its budgeting processes and to make it more accountable to the citizens and the students and their parents that they are charged to represent and to serve. I think with that, I'm going to end my testimony. I'm going to stay here and help answer questions if necessary. But I'd like Ms. Simpson to speak to the committee if that's possible. She actually has much more knowledge directly with working with the ESD than I do, and I would turn it over to her if it's all right with the chair.
Sure. Welcome.
My name is Issa Simpson. I reside in Portland, Oregon, and I am the AFSCME Council 75 representative for the AFSCME Local 1995 members at the Multnomah Education Service District, and that's around 370 members that we have there. And most of those members work as direct service providers to students with learning and developmental disabilities, autism. They work in schools like Helensview, which is an alternative high school for troubled youth and for single parents attempting to raise newborns. And in many different capacities of doing direct services. They also provide, we have a number of staff that are technical staff that provide services to constituent districts doing software and a number of other services that they provide along with the Oregon Department of Education. So it's a pretty varied group that I work with. I have bargained the last three contracts for this group with the Multnomah Education Service District and have come to respect the work that the district does and that my members do deeply. In each of those years, in my first year, the Multnomah Education Service District budget, I was a new staff rep. It was an incredibly difficult budget to get through, to understand the funding mechanisms. We hired an outside auditor to come in, help explain the process to me, what the budget was, how to read it, and how to ask the right questions, and basically educated me on what a school district budget looked like and how to try and understand that. From there, and we asked a lot of good questions that first year. We didn't get a lot of good answers. From then on, with that knowledge that we were armed with and with some very knowledgeable members who work in business services, who work in technology services, and who have worked for the ESD for years, 30 years, some of them, who understand the funding mechanisms at the ESD, we began to ask a lot of questions about where is the money. We're being told that there is no money for salaries. That was, of course, my primary job. But what my members were seeing at the same time was a reduction in staff services, of staff being available to provide services directly to the students. And instead they were seeing a buildup of a business office, furniture, myriad things that we continued to raise issues about. So the basic question was, how are you prioritizing your resource allocation? Because we have fewer staff, more difficult students, and we just don't have the resources to deal with it, and we're seeing more management and more resources being spent in other areas. So we continue to ask that question. In the last go-around, the union, through a various methods of analyzing the budget, identified about a $1.3 million discrepancy in what the ESD was reporting that they had available for salaries and benefits, and what we saw in the budget as available. We were told that we simply didn't understand the budget, and we strove to understand the budget. We asked a lot of questions, we met with them on numerous occasions, and we did try and understand. The ESD told union members, the public, and legislators that we simply did not understand how the budget works. Since that time, constituent district superintendent raised issues about an excess of $1 million pot of money that seemed to have appeared. And soon after that, a business office director was fired or was no longer employed by the ESD, so within days of that meeting. In the last board meeting, MESD board meeting, the current business office director discussed an unexplained $1.5 million budget excess that he's not able to identify where it came from, what it is, what its intended use is, or where it should be applied. That question is still outstanding. We have to applaud him for bringing that to the board and seeking to resolve that issue. We would bring forward that that might be somewhere near the same $1.3 million we were questioning. But I bring this up as one example of the difficulty that we have had of requesting and receiving a true and transparent budget information from ESD. They are difficult budgets to read. They are difficult budgets to understand. There is no doubt about that. The ESDs also face inherent difficulty in planning for services for constituent districts or that constituent districts contract with them on an annual basis. The ESD is currently charging well above the 10% administrative costs that are directed or issued as guides by the Oregon Department of Education. That contributes to districts attempting, constituent districts, Reynolds, Gresham, Barlow, some Portland public schools, a number of constituent districts, attempting to bring those services back into their own districts. And almost always they come back to the ESD. This is disruptive not only for the students, it's disruptive for the districts. And those costs are questioned by some of the constituent districts. They're questioned by the Oregon Department of Education. I know that the MESD is attempting to bring those costs more into alignment with a 90-10 split, but they are far out of line at this point. We question the wisdom over the past year at a time when direct services have been cut, of adding a layer of administrators that is at least 10 administrators at close to $90,000 average per year each. I think that adds on to those costs. Those are not direct service costs. Those are not providing direct services to those students. Throughout my relationship with this local and my representation of them, it has sometimes been frustrating, but I am in awe of them because their primary focus, even it's hard to believe for most people, even during a strike, the primary focus is the direct services to the students. And their frustration at this point and the reason for asking for a bill such as this is that they want a review board that is objective, that has a balanced set of interests, that can take a look at this budget and sit down and ask the right questions with the right perspectives and get the resources where they need to be, and that we can ask the right questions of and be able to get the right answers. And we believe that this review board could provide that service and perhaps the same perspective for the Multnomah Education Service District and perhaps the other ESDs. And again, I don't have great knowledge about the other ESDs' workings.
Okay. Questions, Ms. Simpson?
Well, I've read that. I've gone through that audit myself of MSD. I could understand some of the frustration. So appreciate your testimony and coming here. And we'll go to some other witnesses and have you stand by.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Why don't we both bring up both Ozzie Rose and Chuck Bennett? That's okay.
I think they've met before.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose with the Oregon Association of Education School Districts. And I'm here to testify in opposition to this bill. And I'm not sure if I'm supposed to declare a conflict of interest, but I have a son who is in management at Multnomah ESD. Might even been one of those she referred to, but I'm not certain because I've heard part of those stories from that side. But having said all that, we have a local budget law and we have a collective bargaining law. Both of them apply to all public employees. The budget law specifically references all municipal corporations, cities, counties, special districts, school districts, community college, etc. The ESD portion of the law, by the way, all of those budget, or all of those agencies have to have a budget committee. The ESDs have an additional thing in their law about budget committees. In the general law about local budget law, there is a budget committee that's made up of the governing board and an equal number of electors. And that's who puts the budget together, and then it goes to the board for final action. In the ESDs, there's an additional requirement, and that is that the board is on the budget committee. The rest of the budget committee must be one larger than the board, so there's a majority of non-board members on the budget committee, and the rest of them have to be local component board members or designees of local school boards. And in the pilot ESDs right now that we've created, a budget committee there is 19 members. Nine of them are on the ESD board. The other 10, equal to plus one, are appointed by local component school districts. And of the nine that are on the board, five of those have been elected by those local component districts. So of the 19 members of a budget committee, 15 of them are controlled and or appointed, whatever word you want to use, by the component school districts. There's a fair amount of oversight on behalf of the people served of the ESD. Our other ESDs that are not in the new governance mode, their boards run from 5 to 7 people by law. So you add the, in each case, either 6 or 8. Again, you have to add a majority. And those budget committees then run 11 to 15 in size, and 6 to 8 of them are appointed by local districts, not by or connected with the ESD. The local budget law and collective bargaining apply to all governments. And if the thoughts in this bill are important and so forth, you ought to be looking at these kind of changes for every public agency. I don't believe that that's correct. I believe that the kinds of problems that were mentioned in the previous testimony can be and should be worked out locally. I assure you that I could produce people to tell the other side of this story, but I don't think you want that, and this is not a good place to bargain a local issue. There are difficulties in the process. The budget is not uncomprehensible, or incomprehensible, I guess is the correct word, and I don't think this law is appropriate, and hopefully you will not move it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Chuck Bennett, representing the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. I would just second what Ozzie's had to say. There is sort of a theme going on local issues coming in on these bills today. No doubt there was a difficulty in Multnomah ESD in the bargaining process, and we've seen now in the bill stacks a couple of bills that reflect the kinds of frustrations that folks felt during that. I experienced it during the interim, and asked the superintendent to become the first district to go through the Secretary of State's performance auditing process, the best business practices activity that we've had during the interim, and Bill's asking you, I know, during the session to continue that process. And it was a real interesting experience, I think, for the superintendent and his district to have that audit by the Secretary of State. It was of a narrow band of activities. It was a very complicated discussion, but it pointed up to me again that there are a variety of ways to double check how districts are doing business, but primary, and we all know that who've been involved in local government, that you have your Citizens Budget Committee, you have your governing board, and in the case of ESDs, you also have essentially a council of superintendents through the resolution process that oversee the budget. And then you add, I think, and we're learning, I think Ms. Botkin is bringing really clearly to the fore, you have the analysis, in this case, of your bargaining units that are looking very carefully at what's going on in the district and making their own analysis and establishing their own priorities. And, of course, there's going to be differences of opinion, but I think it is... comforting to know that each of these units of government, each of these ESDs, are audited, do their audits. You know, I think you couldn't look more closely at a unit of government at this point than you do ESDs. I think it has got an overlay of review that is well beyond we see in virtually any other level of local government. So while the bill certainly reflects the kind of dispute that occurred at Multnomah ESD, I don't think it reflects a solution to a problem that exists statewide in our ESD system that would require this kind of special consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Bennett, Mr. Rose?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 650? Okay, then I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 650. No other pages, and we are adjourned. Thank you.